Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Now, here's a question I'm sure you've pondered before. How well equipped are your technicians, laborers, and frontline workers in the soft skills of customer service? Do they know how to build rapport? Do they know how to de-escalate an angry customer? Can they upsell and bring in more revenue for the company? Like, you may be a charismatic owner, but it's your team that actually delivers the work and interacts with your customers. So your reputation in many ways depends on them. My guest on the show today is Mark Madison. He's a professional development speaker and author of 6 books, including his bestseller, Freedom from Fear. Before the big stages, though, Mark spent the first half of his career in the field as an HVAC tech and then as a salesperson, and he's translated those formative years into a customer service excellence curriculum that he teaches to many of the biggest HVAC companies on the continent. And today, he's going to teach us too. Couple notes before we start. First, if you're an owner, this is a great episode to share with your field staff. And second, if you'd like an ebook version of Mark's book, Freedom from Fear, you can download that using the link in the description. Okay, that's enough out of me. Let's get started with Mark.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, where we unpack the systems, tactics, and skills you need to take your fast-growing contracting business to the next level.
If you're here to learn what it takes to scale up, work less, and increase profitability, you've come to the right place.
Stay tuned to learn what separates the new breed of contractor from the old school, and welcome to your ultimate guide on the business of contracting.
Mark Madison, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you?
Good as gold, right as rain, sound as a pound.
I'm glad to hear it. For our listeners, give us a brief background on you. And I think in particular, a lot of like the work that you've done, the focus that you've had in the HVAC world.
In 1976, Benji, I was playing basketball on a scholarship. I had a 3.0 in college, blood alcohol level. And so that should tell you everything you need to know about my misspent youth. As a 17-year-old freshman, I averaged about 12 points a game, and I did make the dean's list. Loved school. But baby boomers were graduating from college, and they couldn't find a job in 1976. I mean, back then it was disco. Now it's Costco, right?
Right.
Back then I had long hair. Now I'm longing for hair. So I had a bit of a crisis. It's like, I need to learn a trade. I need to learn a skill, something nobody could take away from me. So I called my uncle in Ohio and I said, what's the number one skill for a blue collar? And he said, air conditioning refrigeration. So I went to my local Air Force recruiter and tested. And I tested in the 95th percentile. They said, you can have any job you want. My father, who was an Air Force recruiter, tried to talk me out of it. He wanted me to go to college and get a degree. And I wanted to learn a trade. So I left college and I went to Wichita Falls, Texas for 7 months after basic training and then was stationed at Fairchild Air Force Base. And that's where I got my start as a tech. Mm. After I got out of the military, I went through a 4-year apprenticeship. And it turns out I was really good at selling. My third year of my apprenticeship, I sold more service agreements than the guy they hired full time. So it was, and my boss said, I can't get anybody to sell like you do. Would you come into the office? And so that was the beginning of another career. After 10 years as a tech, I transitioned into sales and I just took off. Sales was like basketball. I could get as good as I wanted to, depending on how hard I was willing to work.
Mm-hmm. You just kind of got it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's still fun.
I agree.
Everybody's in sales. The only question is, how good are you at it?
This kind of snowballed into a bit of like a speaking and sort of personal growth career. Yes.
Yes. I went to every seminar and workshop I could go to. I read a book or two a week. I listened to audio programs while I drove. And I remember going to sales training for the first time and having the audacity to say, I want that guy's job. I hadn't even been trained in sales yet. And I'm thinking already had 5-10 years. So 10 years later, that same guy hired me to do sales training for his companies. And, you know, I've been doing it ever since. I wrote a book in 2000. It would be that one. And things just took off from there.
This is Freedom from Fear.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
And it's so a bathroom then, book, Benji. You can read it in 4 sittings if you don't mind your legs going numb.
So since then, you have done a lot of work with larger, like HVAC businesses and other industries as well, correct?
Yes, in your esteemed country, Black & McDonald is the largest commercial HVAC company in Canada.
Yeah.
And I trained their salespeople 3 different times.
Very cool.
In fact, they're top guys in British Columbia.
That makes sense. It's the best place to be. No offense, other provinces.
I'm just saying, you know.
West Coast is the best coast. So, listen, you have built this, put together over the years, like a bit of a customer service excellence curriculum that I want to get into with you today. But I want to sort of set this up for the listener. A lot of these points will be kind of obvious that you're going to know this already, but this helps set context on the conversation we're going to have. Technicians, one term for them. Really what I'm talking about is sort of like boots on the ground, frontline workers in the business right. that we're talking about. That could be a lead painter. It could be a lead carpenter. It could be a landscape technician. You're going to call it different things for your industry. But at the end of the day, it is that that worker bee type role who has technical right. skills, who is getting the actual work done, the unsung hero of all these businesses that we run and own and love. These are incredibly influential people when it comes to customer satisfaction. And I would frame it this way. If you have had a bad experience with any small business in your life as a consumer, like if you just think about it, 99% of the time, it's a frontline worker that pissed you off. It's the person at the Starbucks window who was a jerk that day. It's not the manager in the background in the office. It's the person right. who like served your food cold or treated you rudely or just didn't meet expectations that you had. And so my take on this, and I know that our listeners agree, this isn't necessarily a profound statement, but it sets up what we're going to talk about well. They can make problems go away or they can introduce problems to your business very, very quickly. So they're a very, very pivotal role. And my point is just understanding how important they are to the overall health of the business. And what we're going to talk about for the rest of the conversation is kind of how to level up your technician in terms of their customer service so that they can make problems go away for you and not introduce them to you. That's the idea. So I'm curious, Mark, like just to set the stage here, why, how, when were you asked to put this curriculum together?
I was in Chicago and I was facilitating a meeting with some very large commercial contractors, HVAC and plumbers. And one gentleman pounded his fist on the table and said, "What our guys need is charm school." And I said, "Charm school? You mean like soft skills, like empathy, active listening, dealing with angry customers?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Well, I could do that. That'd be fun." And so I put this curriculum together called Customer Service Excellence, and I wrote an ebook as the handout. And I found it was easier to create new curriculum than it was to find new clients early on. So I surrendered and said yes to these guys. And one of my favorite stories, I was in Southern California doing a seminar on customer service, and I made a very bold statement. I said, the most important person, in addition to the guys on the front line, the most important person in the company is the one who answers the phone. I said, is there one intrepid soul that would be willing to let us call your company to see how you answer the phone? Mm-hmm. And this guy named Mike raised his hand and said, call our company. And I said, well, who's going to answer? And he said, Sarah. I said, well, what will Sarah say? He said, she's been trained to say, good morning. Thank you for calling Mo Plumbing. This is Sarah. How may I direct your call? And this is a company, maybe 12, 15 plumbers. It wasn't a huge company. And I said, okay, let's put it on speaker and see how she does. And Sarah, which pitched perfect, she said, thank you for calling Mo Plumbing. This is Sarah. How may I direct your call? And it just couldn't have gone any better. Mm-hmm. And I said, it was kind of like, you know, it's a surprise to her when everybody started clapping. And so I said, anybody else, the host company, a $300 million company, we are using one of their facilities. This woman said, call our company like that. And I said, oh, who's going to answer? And she went, Karen, like that. And I said, oh, this ought to be fun. I used to do prank calls when I was a kid. I said, I'll put it on speaker. So I call the number and she says, service, just like that. And I said, you've got to get out here now. We've got water leaking on the table. Get to the chopper. Run, John Connor. There's a bomb in there. And she said, F you. And she hung up the phone. She dropped the F bomb, Angie.
Very cool.
And you could hear a pin drop. It was the quietest room you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Or heard. And I said, now might be a good time to take a break. So we took five, longest 5 minutes of my life. How do I recover from this? Honesty is the best policy. Talk about the elephant in the room. We reconvened. I said, okay, let's talk about what just happened. What just happened? And the guy in the front row said, there's a job opening at the ABC company.
And this is a big business? This is like quite a large organization.
A $300 million right. air conditioning company.
Yeah.
Whose name will go unnamed. Yes. And so my point was, you're on the front lines. You're a technician in the broadest terms, no matter what specific industry you're in. Those people and the folks who answer the phone are the most important because they're the vice presidents of first impressions, and you get one chance to make a great first impression. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a very specific set of soft skills that I teach in this seminar.
Let's talk about
one of them is dealing with an angry customer.
Let's talk about them. Yeah. I mean, in no particular order, but like, take me through these fundamental skills and maybe share a few ideas, some practical points on each.
Absolutely. So I was reading an article and it said something about Lester. Actually, it said LES, right? And less is more. And it was, and it basically said, this was like 15, 20 years ago. So I've been teaching this particular aspect of dealing with angry customers for like 15 years now. L stands for listen actively. Now, how do you know when somebody's actively listening to you, Benji? What's the proof? What's the evidence?
So generally speaking, eye contact, someone nodding, someone giving some like small verbal cues like, if they're really actively listening, they will, you know, repeat back one to three of the last few words that they've heard in the sentence, et cetera. I mean, it's, yeah, that would be
you,
the hallmark.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
So there's four steps. Listen, pause, question, paraphrase, and I'll break them down. Listen actively. All the things you just said, nodding, smiling, right? You're leaning forward. You're genuinely listening, and we can tell. Your phone's off. You're not looking at the TV. You're listening actively. Second, pause 3 to 5 seconds, and here's how long that is. And when you get to four, they start talking again 80% of the time. It was a comma, not a period. It was a semicolon, not the end of the paragraph. And I found I was interrupting people's thoughts. Guess when buying decisions are made? In the silence. Mm. And we've got to count to 5 or 6 or 7, however long it takes. So listen, pause, question. And my two favorite questions are, how do you mean? And can you give me an example? For example, in air conditioning, the woman at the house says the unit's making a funny noise. Now, the tech can spend an hour looking for a funny noise, or he can be really smart and say, when you say funny noise, how do you mean? Mm. And she says, that thing on the back, on the concrete slab that blows the trees, she said, it goes, kunk, and it's doing that every hour for the last 24, and it's really hot in here. Well, if you know your salt at all, you know the compressor's pulling lock rotor amps, and it's time to change the compressor. You just saved an hour. How do you mean, or can you give me an example, really says, tell me a story. And once the story's told, now that you have understanding. Mm-hmm. But to secure the understanding, the last part, number four, is paraphrase. In other words, Benji, what I'm hearing you say is the right questions are important. Active listening's vital. Pausing, clarifying, those are things that lead to understanding and connection. And guess what? Most people don't do that. They're waiting to talk. They're waiting to say, that's nothing. One time at band camp, right?
Do you think that this is a fairly easy skill to learn? Like,
No, it's simple.
Yeah.
It's not easy. And so here's what I did to make it part of my life. I took a 3x5 card, just like this. And I wrote, I dominate the listening in every conversation and people enjoy being around me. And I read it 3 or 4 times a day for a month. Mm. And then one day I sold the biggest thing I'd ever sold because all I did was listen. And now what I teach my clients is play the listening game. See if you can get somebody to talk for 15 or 20 minutes without them knowing they've been doing all the talking. And I win every time.
I have a list of personal core values. We talk a lot about core values in business these days. I have like Benji's core values. One of them is, I've said this on the show before, but it's been a while. One of them is be interested, be interesting. And what that means is I think people really misunderstand persuasion, charisma, attraction, all this stuff. You don't actually need to be that interesting to be that interesting. You need to be interested in the person you're talking to. So if you're an active listener and you ask thoughtful questions and you sit there and you nod and you relate and you give an example of a time that you went through something like that, you will always be the most interesting person in the room. And you're not even sharing. You're not even telling stories. You're just listening to other people. And right. So I think people kind of get that wrong. If you want to be more of those words that I just described, you want to be more persuasive. You want to have, you know, have kind of cast a spell over people. That's maybe sounding a little cliche, but you want to have that vibe, that juice. Talk less, right? And listen more. That's been my experience.
God's a genius. Two eyes, two ears, one mouth. Mm. That's a 4-to-1 ratio.
Right.
Right. So we're just on L of Lester. Okay. Now let's go to E.
Okay.
The E stands for echo and emotion. Now, when somebody's upset, there's only two or three emotions you're going to hear. What are they?
Anger, frustration, right? Sadness. I don't know.
Sadness. Those are the big three. You okay. just nailed the Mount Rushmore of emotions.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what you do. You echo an emotion, so you're frustrated. You literally say what you hear. The first time I tried this at home with my wife like 20 years ago. She was crying, and I said, so you're sad. And she goes, no, I'm frustrated. And I grabbed my journal. Tears could mean frustration. 50-50 chance. About a week later, she was crying again, and I'm a caring guy, and I have a good memory. And I said, so you're frustrated. She goes, no, I'm happy. Tears could mean joy. 33% chance.
Yeah.
A week later, she's crying again. I said, so you're happy? She goes, no, I'm angry. 25% chance. I don't have a clue.
They're complex beings.
They are from Venus, sign the Martian.
Yeah. Yeah. They're complex beings.
Just echo an emotion. Mm. You can't. That's the best part. You can't screw up because they're going to correct you if you miss the emotion.
Mm.
Mm. Right? The S stands for sympathy versus empathy. Now, sympathy sounds like this. I am so sorry that happened. We're going to do everything we can to make this right for you. That doesn't mean you've been through it. If you've been through it, now it's empathy. I know exactly how you feel. I lost my father to Alzheimer's. Mm. It was the hardest year of my life. Now, all of a sudden, you're making the deepest kind of connection that you just simply can't do any other way because you've been through that. You've walked in that person's shoes. And that's just L-E-S, right? If that's the only thing you do, less is more. It's a really easy thing to remember. 1, 2, 3. Now, there's three more pieces, and they just, it's like frosting on the cake. Thank the customer. Evaluate, is it people or process? If you keep having callbacks with one technician, one frontline guy or gal, it's a training issue. But if you leave the job worse than you found it, that's a process issue. The last thing on your checklist needs to be a walkthrough and a cleanup. We just left a condo where they redid we just moved, okay? And the roofers came in while we were there and they left a bunch of crap. My wife actually stepped on a nail, you know, one of those roofing nails.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was really upset because they left it worse than they found it, right? And then finally respond. Let the customer know. That's what the R stands for. Respond. As a result of your feedback, here's what we've changed. Thank you so much. And maybe that involves a handwritten note or a coupon or some gesture of gratitude.
How can that little framework... Sorry, did you have something else to say?
Well, yeah. I was just going to say one of my clients, a contractor in Georgia, he put Lester on the wall in his training room.
Yeah.
They made it part of their culture. And by the way, it cost $1 to keep a customer and $7 to get a new one.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a simple way to turn angry customers into raving fans.
I would like to know more about dealing with angry customers. Maybe you can talk about, give some examples or use that framework or anything else. But upset customers are a normal part of the course of business. Like, it's going to happen. It's a guarantee. What are your sort of best practices for a technician to de-escalate that to a point where a reasonable conversation can be had and a resolution can be found and a 5-star Google review can be given?
Well, you have to do the L-E-S-T-E-R, right? You just have to. But then it's really about letting them vent. Think of it as a tea kettle that's boiling and whistling. You turn the burner off and you move the tea kettle over. That's listening.
Right.
And you don't interrupt and you don't tell a story and you don't say, that's nothing, one time at band camp, But the magic question at the end of all the listening is you lean forward and you say, what would you like us to do? And honest to goodness, 80% of the time, whatever they're asking for is nothing. Have you ever had a bad experience at a restaurant? Mm-hmm. And the waiter comes up and said, I'm so sorry. We're overwhelmed. We're understaffed. I brought you a dessert. It's on the house. You know, the guy made or gal made some kind of effort to make it right because he knew that they'd screwed up. What would you like us to do is a scary question for some people, but 80% of the time it's going to be something small. You don't have to give him the farm, but you do need to make some kind of kind gesture to make it right. And I found that to be a magic question to ask.
What kind of communication do you think is the most conducive to really strong, like, client-contractor relationships throughout the course of the project? So, like, what I'm asking about is sort of how often and in what tone and about what should your lead technician be talking to the customer? Do you get what I'm saying? It's like they need updates. They want to be, especially if you're doing residential stuff, like they do want to know about the project because you're working on their home. What sort of communication style and cadence do you think is the best for customer service between the technician and the client or homeowner?
Well, there's two parts to that. There's two answers to that question. One is you have to turn a stranger into a friend. Okay. And then the second thing is you have to explain it in layman's terms so your 12-year-old daughter can understand it. Okay, so let me give you a simple formula for turning a stranger into a friend. When I do presentations, keynotes, sometimes up to 1,500 people, I'll get there early. I'll get everything set up an hour and a half before. And there's always somebody who gets there early. It's usually a contractor and his wife, and they're usually in their mid-50s. And he's sitting in the front row at 6:30, and it doesn't start till 8.
I know that guy. I speak at conferences,
too. You know that guy.
I know that guy.
And I walk up to him, and I say, it's nice you brought your daughter with you. And clearly, it's his wife, right? And she's like, oh, that's so sweet. And I'm like, and he's like, hey, wait a minute. I said, dude, it's a compliment.
Right.
So a CIA, compliment, introduction, ask. So I give a heartfelt, sincere compliment. It could be, I walk up to a guy and I say, man, that's a nice head of lettuce you got there, pal. That's a great head of hair. I wish I had half as much. Now, I've done two things with that. I've complimented his hair and I've made myself the blunt of the joke.
Sure.
So compliment. Then I introduce myself. My name is Mark Madison. I'm the speaker this morning. It's so good to meet you. And then I ask a question, how did you two meet? And everybody loves to tell the How I Met Your Mother story, right? There's even a show called How I Met Your Mother. It's in syndication now. That's how popular that is. And then she'll say, oh, you tell it, honey. You tell it better than I do. And now they tell me their story. Compliment, introduction, ask. I just did my first TED Talk in Raleigh, North Carolina, a week ago Sunday. And before people were coming and sitting down, I went out into the audience and I did that with probably 20 people. One guy says to me, I heard you speak in 2015 in Rapid City, South Dakota at the Day of Excellence with 1,500 people. I said, no way, you were there. He goes, you were great, man. And I was like, that's awesome. So what happened, Benji, is now I have a bunch of friends in the audience. Mm-hmm. When I stepped on that stage, the guy who introduced me had a thick head of hair. And I said, doesn't he have way too much hair for a guy his age? Mm. And I took my cowboy hat off, right? Because I always wear a cowboy hat when I'm presenting. You can see him over here. immediately, I built rapport.
Yeah.
Because I was using self-effacing humor.
Yeah.
So that's the front end of that. The second part is really taking the time to understand, letting the customer understand exactly what you're going to do, laying out the project, whether it's landscaping or plumbing, it doesn't matter what it is. Explain the timelines from beginning to end in simple terms and don't use inside lingo on the outside world.
Say more about that.
I could dazzle you with BTUs and Delta Ts and evaporative cooling and you would know what I'm talking about. But you say that thing out in the backyard that blows the trees, that's the condensing unit. Now, we're going to start there. We're going to set concrete slab. And you explain the process from beginning to end. And when we're all done, we're going to teach you how to use the thermostat. And we're going to do a walkthrough to make sure you understand everything that we've done. Does that sound like a good plan? And they go, this is great. Thank you. And then afterwards, you say, are you happy with what we're doing, what we've done? And by the way, that's the time to say, can you think of a couple of people you get to do to just give that some thought and I'll get back to you. Because if somebody's delighted with the business that you've done, the job you've done for them, you have a right to ask for more business. Do you have any other homes? Can you think of a couple of people you can introduce me to? No one does that, by the way.
What they no one does what?
Ask for referrals or ask if they have. I know I knew a contractor in Kansas City. She had 25 rental houses. She was a pilot. She was a woman in a man's business. Amazing. 25. And she said, you'd be surprised how many people never ask me if I have any more houses. She goes, I have 25.
Yeah.
If I like somebody, I'm going to put them in the other 24. Unassertive salespeople have skinny kids, Benji. You can't. We're all in sales. The only question is how good are you at it? And right now, for some of you who are listening to this, you're thinking, geez, Louise, how do I get Mark to come out to my company? This is fantastic. Well, of course it is. And I'm sure at the end, we'll talk about how to get a hold of me.
I love this CIA acronym. I think it's an incredibly good way to open conversations, both in your personal life and in business. I wonder if we can segue this into talking a little bit about upselling services. So assuming that, you know, rapport has been built and trust is there, one of the fundamental metrics that you will see in really big, really successful businesses, especially home service businesses, is sort of upsell rate. And a lot of techs will get bonused on this, is if you're kind of more sophisticated with your performance pay, a lot of owners will set up a structure so that a technician or a frontline worker can make more by selling either sort of like selling more services to that specific customer or getting referrals, what have you. You just kind of alluded to it. What are some of the fundamental skills, best practices? What's needed to be good at that upselling part?
All right. So I go back to my third year of my apprenticeship. I'm a tech. I'm not even a journeyman yet. I took a 3x5 card and I wrote, sales is fun and easy for me. And I put it on the dashboard of my service truck because we just bought a house and we just had a baby. And I was thinking about getting a part-time job. And I thought, no, I could augment my income by selling maintenance and projects. So one day I changed a compressor on a building in downtown Seattle. It had 10 units on the roof and it was only 4 years old. There's no way a compressor should die after 4 years, but this guy had done no maintenance. Filters were collapsed, belts were broken. He just ignored what was on the roof. So I changed the compressor. I gave him the bill. He goes, wow, this is a lot. And I said, yeah. I said, only the good die young. He said, excuse me? I said, well, this compressor never should have died. I said, you haven't done any maintenance. I said, look, I said, it's your building. You do what you want. But if this was my mother's building, what I'd say is, Mom, you got to let my mother was British. Mom, you got to let me clean the coils, replace the filters, change the belts, whatever it costs me to do that's going to be more than, you know, extending your equipment's life and lowering the operating cost. And just then, Benji, my pager went off. Now, pagers were these things that we had back in the 80s. We called them beepers. And it would beep and we'd say 911. It's like, I've got to get to a payphone, you know, like Superman. Payphones were these glass boxes. Anyway, so he said, hold up. He said, so what are you saying? I need a maintenance? I said, yeah. I said, but you know what? It's your building. You do what you want. And there's the secret sauce, right? Detachment. You lay out the solutions. If it were me or if it was my mother's house, who's going to give their mom a raw deal? Mm. Or grandma even, okay? So you lay out the options, then you pretend like you don't care. And so he goes, write it up. I didn't know what it was, but he wanted it up. Right. And it was an agreement, a maintenance agreement. So I went back to the shop. Sales guy was gone. We never know where those guys are. So I went into the service manager, Carl Lechner, the greatest boss I ever had. God rest his soul. He was on vacation, Benji. So I went through the files, found five buildings similar in size and scope, added them up, divided by five, came up with a number, seemed a little low. So I added 50%. I figured if I was going to get fired, it was on a high margin project. And I typed it up on an IBM Selectric typewriter, right? Just like this one back here, right? and I gave it to him the next day, and the guy signed it without even looking at the price. And I took it back to the shop the next day, and I gave it to Carl. He was back from vacation. He goes, what is this? I said, it's a service agreement. He goes, who told you you could do this? I said, the customer. He said, good answer. And he got out his calculator. And he went, 65% gross profit. How did you do that? And I explained it to him. Because see, I'd had a chimney cleaning business in an earlier life. I understood margins and profit. And so,
Mark, what's the detachment thing and why does it work? Just say a little bit more, because I understand what you're saying, and I've felt that in interactions and sales processes before. But can you explain the why? Is there something going on psychologically, energetically? Like, why is that an effective tool?
Well, first and foremost, once you understand what's needed for the customer, you want to give them two or three options, a choice of yeses. Okay. I spoke to 400 salespeople at Aflac in Wisconsin. I had the number one guy stand up, top producer in the whole state, insurance superstar. I said, why are you so successful? He said, I make 40 calls a day. I quack loudly every day and I offer a choice of yeses. And my mind just was blown. I said, I hope everybody heard what he just said. I don't care what you do. If you make 40 calls a day, you're going to be wildly successful. There's a young man in British Columbia in the book Atomic Habits who talks about making 100 phone calls a day. And within 6 months, he was a manager of the bank. Within 2 years, he was a regional manager and making five times what he was making before. So activity matters. So it's pretty straightforward. Your ability to understand and appreciate the customer's needs, right? When you offer a choice of yeses, you're laying the options out, but then you're detaching. Mm-hmm. You're pretending like you don't care. And my strong suggestion is you begin with the most expensive one first, and then the next one is 20% less as you remove value, and then 20% less again as you remove value again, right? And then once they have two or three options, then it's you change the buying dynamic from if they're going to buy to how.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It totally does. It's a very, very powerful psychological trick. I don't even want to use the word trick. It's not the right semantics, but it is. You are playing into something. You are playing into a human need, which is we talked about this the other day with Chris Voss on the podcast. The illusion of control. When you give someone some forks in the road and they get to select one, it taps into a little bit of this feeling of I get to choose.
Right.
It's the same reason people love Netflix and Amazon and all these streaming platforms. Is there's so many choices to kind of, and you get to choose your own.
But
destiny.
Even they give you a choice of yeses. Movies we think you would like.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Isn't that just a whole bunch of choice of yeses?
Yeah. It's a great point. You people like menus. People like menus that they get to select from, and I think that you can tap into that in your own home service business in a really interesting way. I want
to. Well, what you're saying, Benji, is we like to buy. We don't like to be sold.
Right. People, 100%. People love to buy. We all do. I want to talk about motivation in a sec, but we got to talk about clothing. So. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode is sponsored by Linkville Roofing and Siding. It's owned by Eric and Richard Schmerbach. They've been Breakthrough Academy members for 4 years. They live in Klamath Falls, Oregon. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Klamath. Okay. Roofing and siding, but they run an exterior paint crew and a deck crew. So here are the notes from Eric. I was texting with him this morning. Before BTA, we were plateaued around $2 million in revenue per year for about three consecutive years with a very low net profit percentage, around 3%. That is not good. This year, thanks to an awesome strategic planning event at the Winter Summit, getting called out by my group for having a faulty plan and having to redo my budget while at Winter Summit, we set an aggressive goal to hit $4 million in revenue this year, and we are on track to do so. More importantly, we have seen a substantial gain to our gross profit and net profit. We're trending to hit between 10 and 15% net and have our best year ever. You do the math, 10 to 15% net on a $4 million business. Eric, that's... you're stacking some paper this year. That's freaking awesome, dude. Thank you for the outfit. Really appreciate it. If you want to work with 600 plus amazing contractors like Eric, there'll be links in the description. You can learn a little bit more about Breakthrough Academy and what we do here. Okay, Mark, back to you. I want to move. If you have anything else to cover on the skill set front, feel free to kind of interrupt me here. But I do want to ask you about motivating techs. Like, we can talk about skills and sort of hand-to-hand combat and what to do in certain situations, there's something even more important, which is you need people to, frankly, give a shit enough to do this. And so what are your thoughts? Great hat, by the way. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see Mark's outfit.
What are your only shill things I believe in.
what are your thoughts on...
But you know how I get almost all my polo shirts? You know how I get new clothes?
How?
I'll wear a competitor, manufacturer's competitor when I'm presenting and they'll go, why are you wearing that? I said, well, I don't have any of your shirts.
Yeah. That's a good track. That's a good tactic. You got many, many tricks up your sleeve, dude. You've got the playbook figured out.
But when I talk about techs, I like to put a hat on because I always wore a hat when I was a tech.
Well, you look the part. How do we motivate our technicians to do this? How do we get people to care about customer service? A very easy out would be, hey, man, this is your business. I'm just here for a paycheck. And I'm sure that there will be some listeners who are listening to this and going, yeah, Mark, that all sounds great. But like, my guys aren't going to do that. So just thoughts on motivating people.
Well, okay, first and foremost, and this is like, get this out of the way. This is the truth. If you have 10 technicians, there's going to be two who are going to be selling 80% of whatever it is you want to upsell. Those guys or gals are rock stars. They'll always be at the top. There's going to be two out of the 10 that will never do anything you're pushing. You just need to resign yourself to the fact that they just want to fix stuff and leave, which is fine. But what you're after are the other six. If you can move two or three of them up to join that top 20%, you're doing really, really well. So there's an old expression, the greatest management principle in the world is whatever gets rewarded gets repeated. I had 174 technicians in a room in Kansas City, all home services folks, residential contractors. There were all guys back then. This was like 10, 12 years ago. I said, there's three ways to motivate somebody. I'm just curious, what makes your boat float? Is it time off? Is it a cash spiff? Or is it recognition? What do you suppose the top vote getter was?
I'm going to guess cash or something.
I thought cash. That's what I wanted. Right? But it turns out recognition was number one. Time off was number two. Cash was number three. If you think you know what they want, you don't.
Right.
In the same way you think you know your kids until you ask them what was the most fun you had at when you're tucking them in at night and they surprise you with the answers, you don't know your kids until you ask, because job description for kids 5 to 10 years old is fun.
Right.
So ask them about their job, right? Ask your technicians, what motivates you? Is it time off? Is it recognition? Is it cash?
And so with that information, what would a smart owner go and do?
Well, years ago, this was probably 20 years ago, I was working with a contractor in Michigan, and he goes, he was real proud. He goes, I give my technicians $10 if they generate a lead from the field. And I looked at him, I said, I wouldn't fill out the paperwork for $10.
Right.
So we were talking about a service agreement. And when you have a service agreement on the commercial side, if you sell a $10,000 service agreement, you have $30,000 of pull-through business for repairs and replacement, okay, with a 90% close rate because they're already in the building. Right? So it's a 3-to-1 ratio. Why are you being so cheap? Give them $50 or $100. That's going to motivate them to fill out the paperwork. And by the way, I created a form just for that purpose. So all they had to do was hand the form, fill it out, and hand it and turn it into the shop. So that's huge. Don't be a cheapskate when it comes to cash. And the other thing is, at the weekly, monthly, quarterly meetings, when you get all your frontline folks together, hand that cash out. Call them up and say, Steven, come on up here for the ABC job and count out the money cash.
Mm-hmm. Make a show of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's as much about recognition as it is about the cash.
I love that. Right?
So that's one of the things I talk about with Texas. And then this is what happens. That Steve guy, he's Mr. 20%. He sits down with all this money sticking out of his shirt pocket. And his buddy goes, how did you get all that? He goes, you know those forms we had in that training we did about 6 months ago? I just give it to the customer and have him fill it out. And then I just turn it into the sales guy. And I go, really? It's that simple? Yeah, but if you don't believe in what you do. And let me just make another distinction. And this isn't just for HVAC contractors. It's for everybody. I don't care what manufacturer you use. that you sell in your company and you have in your home, but the one you have in your home and your office should be the one that you sell. You have to believe in the product and the service that you offer. If you don't believe in maintenance agreements, chances are you're not changing the oil in your car. You're sure not changing the filters. Okay. So you have to believe, and it goes back to that guy from Aflac. He quacked loudly every day. He loved Aflac. He believed in it so thoroughly he could sell it. You have to believe in your product and service to be able to sell it. So one of the exercises I do is what's great about this company? And I have everybody write down three things they can think of, and then they shout them out and I put them on a flip chart. And then that becomes something you put on your website. That becomes, so this is what our employees are saying about our company. This is what our customers are saying about our company. Somebody, I was Will Rogers has said, so when somebody else blows your horn, it travels twice as far. You have to ask for that feedback, right? Why is this a great company? Why do you love working here? And by the way, let me make a distinction. And nobody talks about this, and it's something I've been talking about lately that I really believe in. Why do internal customers, employees leave? Right?
Well, there's the reasons they tell you, and then there's the reasons they actually leave.
And unless you're doing an exit interview, you're never going to really know. But it's never for a dollar more an hour across the street.
You don't think so?
No. And the reason I know that is I've been working with contractors for over 30 years. And the number one reason they don't leave is that, okay, you have to understand, every single employee is asking three questions. Is it safe? Do I belong? Do I have a future? Now think about that. Is it safe in every way? Psychologically, emotionally, physically, right? Is there a sense of family here? Do I belong? The more things you can do for your employees, picnics, gatherings, training, education, the more they're going to stay. And do I have a future? I remember I was the top salesman in my company, and I asked the consultant that was working with the company, when you choose a sales manager, where does it come from? The project side or the maintenance side? He said, maintenance. Okay. I said, that's the one I want. I was already thinking about the next job. So I think that's an important question contractors need to ask themselves. Is it safe? Do I belong? Do I have a future? Because that's why they leave. It's not for a dollar more an hour across the street.
What are your thoughts on the role that leaders need to play, business owners need to play in? Because what we're talking about here, by the way, is we're getting into some like personal development skills. We're learning how to regulate emotions. We're learning how to persuade. We're learning how to actively listen, de-escalate. You know, we're even talking a little bit about career planning and growth in general for the human beings in our business. Can you just describe what you've learned, your philosophy around how involved a small business owner should be in like the personal development of the people on their team? Is that something that they should be thinking about and doing a lot? Is it kind of, hey, you know what, that's maybe not in my job description. I'm here to run a business, and this is, you know, fundamentally this is about doing good work. Like, what is your opinion on how involved a small business owner should be in the growth of their people in their lives?
Okay, so I have a couple of answers to that question. Number one is I have an acronym, another one that's easy to remember, ARU, right? And if you think about it, it's also a question, are you doing it? So appreciation is the A. The deepest craving in the human condition is the need to be appreciated. William James, the father of American psychology, said that. Appreciation. I love that you're here. I don't know if you've seen Ted Lasso, but oh my gosh, all through that series, Ted saying, I appreciate you, man. He's talking about that all the time. And that's my new favorite phrase. I appreciate you. I appreciate your mustache. You look like Ted Lasso.
I've heard that a few times.
Oh, I'll yeah, man. It. Mustaches are it. Back.
Jason, right? Jason Sudeikis is hot. I'll take the comp. I'm good with it.
He's the real deal. That guy is super talented. I love his work.
I know.
Next, appreciation, respect. You got to go back and remember what it was like to be the 19 or 20 year old new guy on the block. I grew a mustache at 23 so I could look older, and I just looked like a porn star from the 80s. Then I Then I, at 63, I wanted to grow a mustache to look younger, and I look like Wilford Brimley on Seinfeld, the postmaster general.
Can't wait for
trying. So it just didn't work for me, okay? But I was looking for respect. And everybody, R-E-S-P-C-T, find out what it means to me, Aretha Franklin. Come on. And then finally, understanding. And that goes back to active listening. There, one of my very first clients was a guy in Toledo, Ohio. His name was Norb. That was his first name. And he had a line of people waiting to come to work for him. And I was fascinated because most contractors are going, I can't find or keep good people. And this guy had a line of people waiting to work for him. And one day we're standing in his shop and his brand new parts driver came, 19, 20-year-old kid. He said, how was your weekend? And this young man said, oh, I'm really stressed out. We're moving and I don't know what I'm going to do because I don't even have, you know, I can't afford to hire a truck. He goes, we've got a huge flatbed. You could probably move everything in your apartment on one trip. Here's the keys. I'll help you this weekend if you need it. And I thought that kid was going to start crying. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Teddy Roosevelt said that. And so Zig Ziglar later said it was his, but it was really from Teddy Roosevelt in 1904. Right. So that's the first thing is what are you doing to serve your employees? Another one of my contractor clients, this guy was amazing. On Fridays, he would bring a massage chair in, 10-minute massages. He turned the organization chart upside down. He was at the bottom, and everything else was about serving the people above him. Once a month, he rode with a technician, and he carried their tools. See, he started as a tech, so he appreciated. And he'd carry their tools, and he would ask him questions like, what can we do better? What do you guys need? And one guy said, you know, you guys have a Coke machine and a bunch of junk food. He said, why isn't water free in the refrigerator? And why don't you put a bunch of fruit in there? So that's what he did. He started listening to his employees. And I mean, this guy, he started with nothing and he built a $40 million business and then he sold it. And he's one of the best leaders I ever came across because he genuinely listened to his employees and he humbled himself.
So ARU, recap, A is for appreciation. R is respect, U is understanding.
Yes.
That's the and are you doing sauce.
It? Yeah. With everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, take the time to spend time. When I first started in sales, I took every technician out for breakfast because I like breakfast. I'm a big breakfast guy. And I said, what do you want me to sell? And one guy said to me, I've been here 10 years. Nobody's ever taken me out to breakfast before. I said, well, I was a tech for 10 years and now I'm the sales guy. So I want to sell what you guys want to work on. Mm. I mean, it's just simple.
Yeah.
It's simple stuff. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But it's being human. And, you know, as long as we're talking about training, if you're not training, Maya Angelou said, we train animals, we educate people. If you're not providing education for your employees on a regular basis, you can't expect to grow. I work with a company in Arizona. They're the largest home services residential contractor in Arizona. They're a $275 million company. And Paul is the CEO and founder of the company. When he bought the company in 2004, they were doing $7 million a year. And he grew 20 to 30% a year until now.
For 20 years, he, just about, yeah.
He told me a story one night. He said, do you understand the fish tank principle? And I said, I have no idea. By the way, I convinced him to write a book, right? So his book's called Tricks of the Trade, Paul Kelly. You're going to want to read that book. It's phenomenal. I wrote the introduction, so kind of have a vested interest in his success. But Paul said, a fish in a pond will only grow to the size of the tank and no bigger, right? And in proportion to the number of other fish that are in the tank. He said, the $1 million contractor who wants to get to two is in too small a building. He needs to buy or rent a $2 million building if he's going to grow into it. And Paul practices what he preaches because he's bought the contiguous properties all around him. It's like Bonanza now. That's an old TV show from the 50s and 60s, Benji.
You're really dating yourself, man. We got pagers. We got typewriters.
Well, my dad used to watch it. I never really saw the show. I just read about it.
Come on.
Hey, I'm old, man.
I know.
I'm so old, I don't even buy green bananas anymore. I remember when the Dead Sea was sick. So, you know. I'm old. But I've written 9 books. So
I like that green bananas bit. That's funny.
My friend Doug was 90. He said that to me one day.
Hey, I have a question for you about, okay, let me set this up because we're kind of like flirting with this subject matter anyway. You talk about, you know, like the pond analogy and, you know, buy a bigger building and make it sort of making big moves in business. You wrote this book called Freedom from Fear. Okay. And I think there it is. I think that this is probably true of small business in general, but I think it's especially true for contractors. Let's be honest. Like there's a lot of fear that we have to deal with in these businesses, right? You got afraid to run out of work, afraid to lose your staff. You're afraid someone will get hurt on your job site. Afraid of not making payroll. You have a fear of going out of business, a fear of a recession that may or may not be right around the corner, right? There's a fear of a big job going majorly sideways and a customer getting upset. You have a fear of bumping into crazy customers unexpectedly. Now, there's a lot there. I want you to just maybe talk about the psychological underpinnings of fear in the context of a small business owner. What being afraid as a small business owner is really costing us. And right. then are there any strategies that you, or any strategies, tactics, steps that you would take for someone to just get over that? Maybe not get over it, but be able to take the step forward that they need to be able to take the big shot that they want to despite it.
Those are great questions. And you're right. I mean, I'm self-employed. When I call in sick, I know I'm lying. And these contractors are the same way. They have this huge payroll and they're worried. But what you have to go back and remember is FEAR is an acronym. It means false evidence appearing real. So in the very last chapter, I added a chapter to this. This is the third edition. By the way, this has sold like 200,000 copies, been translated in a dozen languages. But there's some ghosts of fear. You have to remember fear is like fog. If you're driving along and all of a sudden you hit a fog bank, what do you do?
You slow down.
Slow way down. Yeah. You might even stop. But 1 square mile of fog is 12 ounces of water. It's false evidence appearing real. It's not real, but we still slow down anyway. So I dissected something from Napoleon Hill. He called it the 6 ghosts of fear. And these are the ones that I think most people struggle with. Fear of poverty. I didn't know we were poor until Julie Jacobson said, "How come you wear such weird clothes?" Mm. I thought when my parents said, "If you pay half, I'll pay the other half," they were teaching me self-reliance. No, we were just poor. Okay, we didn't have any money. I never missed a meal. I had a warm bed to sleep in, but I was one of the have-nots. Mm-hmm. So never going back to that place drove me. And it drives a lot of people who are successful as they grew up in poverty. I've read hundreds of biographies. You know, that's one of the driving forces. Fear criticism. Put a crab in a bucket of water, he'll climb right out. But put 5 crabs in that same bucket and they'll never get out because they pull each other down. Mm. You know, we pull each other down. We're afraid of what they're going to say. What will they say? Well, who's they? Who is they? Right? I don't care what people think of me. Everybody's always glad to see me, Benji. Someone I arrive and someone I leave. They're all glad. One way or another. So the criticism doesn't bother me. I love the criticism because I want to know how to get better. Number 3, fear of ill health. My mother used to say, if you have your health, you have everything. So do something about it. Drink lots of water. Eat right. Look, I wrote a book called Freedom from Fat after I lost 50 pounds and 10 inches off my waist. Right?
Are you joking or you actually did?
No, dude, I'm 6'7", okay? And I'm about 250 now, but I was 305. Now, nobody said I was fat. No one came out and said, "Hey, fat boy." They didn't say that. They said things like euphemisms like, "Hey, you're a big guy. Did you play football?"
Yeah.
No, I played basketball. And they went, "Oh," like that. Right. So I set a goal. I grabbed a 3x5 card and I wrote, you know, "I feel great at 248 with a 36 inch waist." And a weird thing started happening when I started affirming that goal. I started noticing how skinny people ate. You know, skinny people almost never finish their meal at a restaurant.
I know. I'm so jealous. I wish I had that gene, but I don't.
Dude, and they'll go, "You want a doggy bag?" And they go, "Nah."
Yeah, I'm good. I've never done that in my entire life.
My son and daughter-in-law are like that. They go, "Nah." And my wife's like, no, we'll take the doggy bag. Like, right? Do you ever do this with your kids? They didn't finish their meal, so you ate what they didn't eat, waste not, want not. That was just the old tape that I used to hear my mother say all the time, waste not, want not, right? So I would overeat. I ate 40 pieces of pizza on a bed in college.
That's a lot.
Point guard said I can eat more than you. My whole life. So when I stopped playing basketball and I started coaching, I gained 5 pounds a year for 10 years. So I did something about it. I went to work and I started interviewing. I interviewed hundreds of people. I read 10 books on wellness and I came to 3 simple conclusions. Portions, quality, exercise. Mm. Right? Cut your portions in half. Walk every day. Drink lots of water. Portions, quality, exercise.
Yeah.
And I lost the 50 pounds. And then I wrote a book about it.
It's pretty, at the end of the day, it is a pretty simple equation. It's just difficult to do. Simple, but not easy. What are the other ghosts of fear?
Oh, fear, loss of love. I've been married to my wife for 44 years. But you know, one day one of us is going to go. I don't know who's going to go first. But so there's a great interview that David Letterman did. He interviewed Warren Zevon, who was one of my favorite musicians, Werewolves of London. I mean, the guy was a brilliant musician. And because he was dying of cancer, he had him on his show every night for 5 nights. And on the final night, he said, now you know you're close to the end. What advice would you offer? And he said, enjoy every sandwich. And I got to tell you, man, I got goosebumps. I still think about that. Every time I have a sandwich, I think of Warren Zevon. And I think every day when I wake up, Benji, I say, thank you, God, for one more day. Because all we have is today. It's why we call it the present. Fear of old age. You know, I quoted Dugout Doug on the bananas thing. But the other thing he said to me, he was 92 years old when I met him. And he said, I used to do vaudeville. He said, I'm so old. I remember when the Dead Sea was sick. And I thought, that's how I want to be when I'm 90.
Right.
Okay. And here's another thing. And nobody talks about this. And I don't know why. 65 to 70% of men who retire are dead within 18 to 24 months of retirement.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And I've been claiming that for years. And then I read Alan Zimmerman's book, Pivot, and he cited 2 separate studies by IBM and Xerox that said 75%. Okay. And here's why I think. Number one, women eat better than men do. They eat smaller portions of healthier food. They have a salad. We have a cheeseburger or two, right? They exercise. They walk in groups. And when they're walking, they do the talking. They do the walk and talks. Men don't. We don't exercise. Flipping the remote control is not going to, jumping to conclusions, skating on thin ice and flying off the handle is not going to lower your metabolism. So it's pretty simple stuff, but the killer is if I am what I do, when I don't, I'm not. If I am what I do, my work, if all my worth is tied to my work, and as men, it is. When I don't do it, retired, I'm not worthy. Mm. And the answer, and you know what? Golfing and traveling and all those things are great. But after a year or two, you go, okay, now what? And I can't tell you how many contractors have said, all right, I'm starting another business.
For sure.
And the guys who live to be in their 90s are the ones who never retire. Somebody asked me, well, you've written 9 books. When are you going to retire? I said, well, I got like 10 or 12 more books in me. I'm just now getting really good at presenting.
Yeah, yeah.
Why would I stop to do what? Travel is what I do. I travel every week. So
what are though your sort of favorite strategy, like coming back to the business context and sort of like dealing with fear in a functional way. And I love this definition of courage. Like courage is not the absence of fear. It's just doing what you need to do despite it. It's like taking that step with the fear. What do we do to sort of like I say, take the big shots, make the move, buy the building, hire the expensive person that we need in our business? It could be something as small as getting a new vehicle for the business, but how do we get over the fear and do the thing that we need to?
One of the things I do is I keep a journal, right? And here's mine right here. AAF is the largest filter manufacturer in the world, and they gave me a bunch of these when I presented to them in Las Vegas. I've been keeping a journal since 1982. My early journals were pipe fitting and wire diagrams, and I still have it from 1982. It's in my bookcase over here. Keeping a journal is a place to put all the concerns and frustrations and worries that you have. years ago, my wife and I were driving somewhere, and she goes, I'm worried about a bunch of things. I said, well, I pulled the car over. And I said, tell me what you're worried about. And she said, and so I listed them. There were five things. And so I wrote them down. I put the date at the top of the journal. And a week later, we were out to dinner, and I grabbed the journal and I said, okay, here are the five things you're worried about. How many of them actually happened? Four of them never happened. And the one thing that did happen wasn't a big deal. And so I'm this list guy, right? I make lists. I tell salespeople, at the end of a sales call, draw a line down the center of your journal. On the left side, write down, what did you do well? On the right side, what one thing could you improve? Three or four things you did well, one thing you could improve. The palest ink is better than the strongest memory. I talk about that in Freedom from Fear. We've got to put it down on paper. The moment we write it down and the ink dries, a solution begins to form in our subconscious. Mm. And we start slowly going to work. Have you ever had this happen? Juan and I were talking about favorite movies, and he said Pulp Fiction, right? Great so movie. I use this analogy. Do you ever have this happen? Somebody says, hey, what was the name of that guy? What was the name of that movie with that guy with John Travolta? And it was all that killing. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know what you want. Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of it. Right. And so like an hour later, you're driving down the freeway. Right. And you go, Pulp Fiction. Right. Well, that's what happens. We have a little guy in the basement. And when we send a question down to him, it's like putting in a tube in the bank. It goes down to him and it goes ding. And he goes, finally a project. And he goes through all the files down in your creative subconscious. And then he sends the answer and he sends it up and it goes ding. We don't use our creative subconscious effectively to solve problems. And a journal is a place to say, so what I've been writing in my journal for years is, how can I improve the quality and quantity of my service to other people? Mm. I learned that from Earl Nightingale, who was a genius. And as a result of asking that question the last 20 years, I have an e-zine that goes out to 8,000 people. I do a podcast twice a month. I do 60 to 70 presentations a year. I created some video. I just did my first TED Talk. All those things happen because I asked myself, how can I improve the quality and quantity of my service to other people? Mm. And that's one of the greatest questions we can ask and answer, but we don't. And if we use the journal as a tool, as a personal development tool, it will help us get where we want to go. My goal's going here. When I close a deal, I write the word win down and describe what happened. So many times we succeed in some area and we couldn't even tell you why. Mm. But going back and saying, why did I close the biggest deal in the history of our company? There were specific steps, things that you did. You need to go back and remember what those things were so you can repeat it, A, and you can teach it to somebody else, B.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It's a really, really powerful point. I mean, and two, I would even expand it. I would say journaling and like written word is a powerful way to do it. Prayer is a powerful way to do it. Visualization is a powerful way to do it. This idea of tapping into the deeper intelligence inside of all of us. There are a few different mechanisms. There are a few different inlet valves to access it. But I love the idea of getting really, really clear on what it is you're scared of. And then, you know, it gets a little woo-woo, but asking a higher power, or if like you're a hardcore atheist, just ask yourself, have faith in yourself that you can, you know, you will come up with some solution. You will come up to some answer to the thing that you're scared of.
I don't know if you can see this, but I put this in my last book, As We Think, So We Become, and I'd like to read it if that's okay.
Read it. It's great.
It was written in the 30s and 40s from a guy named Dale Wembro. And a lot of people have kind of globbed onto it and called it their own, but essentially it's the same text. This is called Just for Today. Just for today, I'll live through the next 12 hours and not try to tackle all of life's problems at once. I'll improve my mind. I'll learn something useful. I'll learn something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. I'll be agreeable. I'll look my best and speak in a well-modulated voice, be courteous and considerate, and I won't find fault with a friend, relative, or colleague. I will not try to change or improve anyone but myself. I'll have a program. I might not follow it exactly, but I'll have it. I'll save myself from two enemies, hurry and indecision. I'll do a good turn and keep it a secret. That's one of my favorites. And if anyone finds out, it won't count. I'll do two things I don't want to do just for the exercise. I'll believe in myself. I'll give my best to the world and be confident the world will give its best to me.
I love it.
I want you to fold your arms. Which arm's on top?
My right.
Why?
It's just the way my body does it.
Okay. If I asked you to do it 100 times, you do it that way every time?
I'm pretty sure I would.
That's safe to say it's a habit.
Right.
Is it also safe to say that first we form habits and they form us?
That is safe to say.
And is it safe to say if I'm a contractor doing a million and I want to get to two, I'm going to have to do something different?
That is extreme. That's a foregone conclusion.
Now fold your arms the other way.
It's pretty uncomfortable.
How's that feel?
Terrible.
You didn't like it?
No.
Congratulations. Welcome to stretching your comfort zones. Drive a different way home. Eat left-handed. Let your wife choose the movie. Read a different kind of book. Throw yourself out of your comfort zone on a regular basis. I used to change filters and now I do this. God bless America and Canada.
Thanks for looping us in. Mark, I think that's as good a place as any to wrap. But I want to mention we have made available Freedom from Fear. We're going to make that as an ebook that someone can download using the link in the description. And then if people want to connect with you, they want to learn more about you, read some of your stuff, whatever, like what's the best place to do that?
Well, it's Mark Matteson, M-A-T-T-E-S-O-N. And I'll just give you some contact information. I'll just give you my phone number. It's 206-697-0454. You can go on my website, www.sparkingsuccess.net.
That's the phone number. Guys, if you're listening to this, let's get some prank calls going. It's 206-697-0454. The karma is going to come back. You're going to get a few prank calls phoned to you, I'm positive.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time.
I'm just kidding.
Let's see. What else? This is a really long email. Forgive me, but it's I get a lot of grief for this. It's mark.enjoythejourney.mattison. M-A-T-T-E-S-O-N @gmail.com.
Okay. We'll put all that stuff below. People can find you. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure talking today. We've covered customer service excellence. We've covered personal growth. We've covered dealing with fear. It's been a journey. You're the best, man. Let's do this again soon.
I appreciate you, Benji. And let me just say, your future's so bright, it burns my eyes.
Great. Glad to hear it. I needed that. Thanks, bro. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.